Hello, and thank you for joining me today. My name is Philip Macko, and I will be the presenter today. I'm going to be posting this presentation both in podcast form on our Doing the Thing channel. Jason's tied up today, so I'm doing kind of a solo session. I'll also be posting the video from this presentation. And if you enjoy the content and you're listening as a podcast, but you want to see some of the slides and more importantly, the data revealed on those slides, I will include links, video links to the presentation as well. Let me share with you, folks that should be tuning in this presentation. And if you don't fall in this category, don't feel bad if you sign off. But this presentation is really for those people who are looking to make a change in their career or considering making a change in your career. And if you are now or into the future considering, today's session is going to be really important. In it, we're going to begin by getting into some of the data and statistics around transformations in the job market and what's really going on, what's driving these types of changes, and most importantly, some strategies to help you as you begin to pursue those new career opportunities. I will share my screen in just a second. Bear with me. Today's presentation is called Your Career Revolution, and the question is, are you ready for a change? I'll tell you my origin story. I am a professional career ownership coach, and I've been doing my coaching practice for a little bit over 6 years now. I spent about 40 years in, that makes me sound old, 4 decades in corporate America. And I reached a place in my career at 55 years old where I had gotten remarried. And my job as VP, senior VP of an international music publishing company, required a significant amount of travel. I never really unpacked a suitcase, instead, just kind of moved things in and out of it. And I realized that that wouldn't provide the kind of continuity for a new marriage that would lend itself to a marriage working. As importantly, two other factors. I recognized that I was building wealth for others, and that frustrated me. There were a lot of things within the organization that I really, really loved. There were some other things that caused some stressors, and I had to reconcile myself with that. And then finally, I've always had the goal of professional speaking, of becoming a writer, and I'm proud to say that I have now published my fifth book since leaving corporate America. My fourth book was on career resiliency for a publisher based in the UK. And this presentation is really about the facts, figures, and findings as a result of the research I did for that book, which includes, Harvard Business Review and McKinsey and Associates, Gallup poll information, Pew Research. I share all that with you to let you know that this is just not an opinion. It's a well-researched opinion that I'll share with you. So again, if you are in that position of actively pursuing a change or considering a change into the future, this presentation may be helpful to you. Let's start by just talking about the 3R strategy, and I'll get into much more detail on this, but I want to share the facts and figures, the statistics first, and what's contributing to a major shift and revolution in the traditional career market. And I want to introduce to you these three strategies. The first being research, the second being reimagine, and the third being reinvent. So stick a pin in that. We'll come back to that in just a little bit. So let's look at what's going on. And when I did the research for the book, I found these statistics to be shocking. To begin with, according to Gallup poll, for every year since 2004, workplace productivity has been on a steady decline. And it's estimated that that decline in productivity is costing the economy somewhere in the order of about 7.8 trillion annually. That's trillion with a T. Now, what could be contributing to those lost productivity numbers? Ask yourself that question. And I imagine as you do, you might be thinking about the death by meetings that occur in corporate America, those non-productive meetings to talk about what we're going to do in the next meeting and the meeting after that, and then the meetings to follow. could be micromanaging managers. It could be merger acquisition situations. It could be a number of different factors that are affecting and driving that. It could be the shift from in-person to remote during the pandemic and the pullback to hybrid or full-time location-based kinds of opportunities. All these things are having mitigating effects on the global productivity numbers. Gallup also found that 60% of the entire global workforce feels disconnected from their jobs. And perhaps you do as well, as you're listening to this. But let's think about this for a minute. I've had the pleasure of traveling and doing business across Scandinavia, Europe, all throughout South and Central, as well as North America. And I can tell you, of all the cultures I've interacted with in business, the US culture seems to identify themselves more with what they do for a living than perhaps any other culture. And to give you a quick example, let's say you're meeting someone for the first time. Likely it is that they're not going to ask you, "Hey, who are you? Tell me a little bit about you." One of the first conversation starters instead is going to be, "What do you do for a living? What kind of work do you do?" Right? And we as Americans tend to build our self-identity oftentimes around what we do for a living and not necessarily who we are. And that presents a real challenge if 60% of the entire workforce is emotionally disconnected from that thing that they most identify themselves with. You can understand why the next numbers we look at might be occurring. And to give you perspective, in 2009, 21 million employees resigned from their roles. Guess what the number was in 2022? 50.5 million, over double, and a number equal to 24.3% of the entire US workforce. So if you're considering a change, I share this with you for a number of reasons. Number one is you're not alone. And number two is we have to take steps towards reducing this emotional disconnection. And really find the thing that engages us. Because in the first half alone of 2022, that's the most recent data that I could get access to, 65.1% of the entire US workforce was looking for a new job, according to Pew Research. So, what's driving this? And perhaps you can relate to one or more of these things. In fact, oftentimes, it's not just one single issue, it's a multitude of issues that aggregate up together. Strained relationship with management accounts for 50% of the people looking to make a change. Burnout, 40%. Feeling disrespected in your role, 35%. Lack of advancement opportunities, 33%. Lack of scheduling flexibility, 24%. And working too many hours, 20%. I'm sure that each of you listening can relate to those things. But if you were to bottom line it, it's really about needs that are not being met. And when needs aren't met, it puts us in a position that forces up us to consider to make a change. But we have to be intentional in what that change is. And so commonly in my experience, I've coached hundreds of people across the 6 years I've been working as a professional career ownership coach. And I've noted that there are four very common reactions to, determining that it's time to make a change in your career. And unless we're intentional in what we do, we can be reflexive in what we do. And these are four examples of how that reflexiveness can affect our future and our careers into the future. The first is called the treadmill. And, imagine we, like I did when I started with Philip Morris, I thought straight out of college I was going to stay with Philip Morris until I retired. That was the world that I grew up in. It's certainly not the world of today. But it's almost as if 5, 6, 7, 8 years into my career, while I felt like I was moving forward and advancing, while I was getting promoted from position to position, eventually, unbeknownst to me, I stepped on a treadmill and I was no longer moving forward. I was no longer advancing in my roles, responsibilities, and income. It's almost as if at some point I inadvertently stepped on a treadmill and I was running in place. And one day I realized that I'm not moving forward any longer. And many of the clients I work with have that same experience, but the risk they run is unless there's intentionality about what comes next, it's very likely that you could jump off one treadmill, jump onto the very next treadmill, and because it looks shiny and brand new, point an accusatory finger at the prior treadmill and think you're moving forward again, only to find yourself a few years later running in place again. So definitely we want to avoid the treadmill. Equally, we want to avoid the pendulum, which is, and this I hear this commonly, folks are so frustrated with their current situation that they literally swing the pendulum as far away from their current circumstances as they can, only focusing on what they don't want and finding the opportunity that is not what was the last opportunity that they left. The reality is somewhere within that continuum, that pendulum swing could be the right answer. Again, looking inward, being introspective, and we'll share some strategies with you on how to accomplish that, but avoiding that drastic move back and forth of the pendulum and finding where that right spot in the is. Sometimes I see a full pivot where I'm just fed up with this industry and I'm leaving it completely and I want to explore where I can go next. That's a little bit problematic, first of all, in the traditional wage market, because the traditional wage market almost becomes a narrowing funnel. Right? What you've done in the past, the titles you've held, the industry you've worked within, the roles you've held, those types of things pretty much dictate what doors open for you. And trying to get outside and above and beyond that in the traditional wage market can be super challenging. And finally, I've also observed the full surrender where folks almost turtle up and they say, I'm just going to ride it out. There's nothing else out there for me. I'm unhappy, but I'm 5 years, 10 years, 3 years away from retirement, whatever that number is. I'm just going to kind of suck it up and hope that, I can hold on to this position a little bit longer, despite how unhappy they are, despite how their income, lifestyle, wealth, and equity goals may not being met, that surrender occurs. So we want to avoid those reactions, most especially because of this. It's the famous words of the philosopher Buckaroo Banzai. Yes, I'm dating myself by pulling this reference, but famously said, wherever you go, there you are. And until you get intentional and self-reflective about what it is you do and don't want and what you want to see your life look like, until you hold a mirror up to yourself and really take a good look inside, until you take a flashlight and shine it under the bed where all those monsters hang out, until you've done those things, you run the risk of making a change that's not going to really fulfill and accomplish those goals that you have. So let's talk about what to do. In a previous episode on the Doing the Thing podcast, Jason and I explored the concept of primary aim, and we go into much more detail than I'm going to today. So if you really want to dig into this further, please check out that episode on primary aim, and there'll be a lot more detail there. But at a very high level, the things that give you most energy, the things that you find most fulfilling, those define your primary aim. And the good news about discovering your primary aim is it exists within already. It's just a matter of discovery, not invention. So let's talk about some steps to establish that primary aim. Because before you go out to the market and do some of the other things we'll talk about, you ought to know where you're trying to get to, right? You want to have a roadmap towards it. You want to define what it looks like. And it starts with identifying what you don't want and list as many as you can, and then go through and prioritize those to the ones that trigger the strongest emotion that you want to avoid in this next career iteration. Equally as important, defining what you do want. Now, avoid money, avoid new car, avoid boat, avoid those material things. But think about the EI and EQ components of this next move, and what does that need to look like? What resonates most for you? What rewards you most in the things that you do? Take those two lists and aggregate them together and begin to narrow down to the most important non-negotiable things that you require as a person that are going to be most fulfilling to you. And begin to list out the barriers to accomplish those things. This is where the real work comes in, because there are roadblocks in front of us. There are challenges in front of us achieving our goals. That doesn't mean we can't achieve them. We have to recognize those barriers. Again, shine that flashlight under the bed to the hairy monsters. But now we have to seek mentors. We have to read books. We have to develop strategies. We have to think about how do we break down that barrier? How do we bust through that wall to accomplish those things that we want to do? So by ranking the do's and don'ts, and then identifying the barriers and beginning to think about how those barriers can be overcome is an important part of this exercise. Next, if you think about how you want to be remembered, let's say you're retiring, let's say, God forbid you've passed on. How do you want folks to remember you? What do you want them to say about you? And all these things combined will help you assemble your primary aim, which is usually a single sentence, a very intentional sentence that defines all of those things very succinctly. Some sample questions you can ask yourself in building your primary aim: what do I value most? How do I want my life to feel on a daily basis? Of all the things in my life I've done, what gave me the most pleasure? Where am I both on and off track of my long-term goals? And if I knew I couldn't fail, what career would I choose? Most importantly is the magic question. So, don't think about the wide chasm between where you are today and where you want to be. Instead, think about the steps along the way, those incremental movements and changes you can make that will lead you towards that place that you want to be in the future. And if you looked out a year from today, what would have to have happened both personally and professionally for you to be happy with your progress? And defining that is really, really empowering. Here's what mine looked like. My primary aim sentence was, I'm in a role that provides me the opportunity to help others daily in a meaningful way while meeting my stated income, lifestyle, wealth, and equity goals, and providing me sufficient freedom to explore my two passions, speaking and writing. And I'm honored to say, in addition to the books, I've been able to speak internationally many, many times since leaving corporate America. I host a weekly podcast called Doing the Thing with my co-host Jason. I'm developing a YouTube series on career reinvention and some other topics that I'm passionate about. I've had the opportunity to mentor other people who want to become writers and really kind of guide them towards the initial steps through the more sophisticated ones in becoming published. And all of those things are meaningful to me. I would never have been able to achieve them had I stayed where I was. But that being said, just having a primary aim, just identifying the barriers, doesn't mean we're going to succeed in what we do, because again, we have to turn inward and we have to ask ourselves some questions about what's going on inside of us and do we really have the energy and wherewithal to drive these types of things? Because in our past experience, there are three kind of major derailers. We call them the tripwires. The first is learned helplessness. And I became a student of Martin Seligman's work in the field of positive psychology. He posited that psychology tends to focus on the deficiencies in our personality as opposed to accentuating the positives. And he did years and years and years of research, he and his team, and developed really a vibrant approach to psychology. But one of the experiments, excuse me, that he conducted, and I'm going to warn you, it's a little tough to hear about, but it does illustrate best the learned helplessness situation that I want to identify with you. It was an experiment where he put rats into a maze, and at the very back of that maze, there was kind of a cage-like enclosure that had a movable gate. And he electrocuted just enough that the rats could feel that jolt, if you will. He electrocuted under the gate. So imagine all the rats are sitting on that cage side of the equation. He opens up the gate. There's food on the other side that they can smell. But the minute they get near that gate, they experience that jolt. And they try and they try and they try, and every time they get that jolt, eventually after an hour or so, The rat stopped trying. And what's interesting is Seligman then de-electrified the cage. However, no rat tried to get out again until he coaxed them out with food closer and closer to get them brave enough to step over that. In other words, they had failed so many times to get through that gate that they just gave up trying. And we experienced that in our careers as well. And just because you've tried to advance your career, you've tried to make a change in the past, doesn't mean you can't do it today. The aggregation of your life experience says that you're a different person today than you were even yesterday. And, checking yourself in the mirror for those learned helplessness kinds of syndromes is super important. Equally as important, the fear of messing up. Look, I get it. We have mortgages, we have kids to put through college in some cases, we have obligations, we have retirement to plan for. And especially in the later phases of our careers, we can't afford to make mistakes, right? So that fear of messing up sometimes prevents us even from taking steps to pursue those things that we really want. And I think we have to recognize, how do you get over fear of messing up? It's with facts, right? And finally, career cognitive dissonance, where we're in a situation where we feel strongly about our capabilities, but for whatever reason, the industry, the management team, whatever it is, don't seem to recognize the talent that we certainly feel we have. And sometimes that can be debilitating. It is oftentimes what drives us to make a change, but it's also that inner voice that questions whether we can pull it off or not. So I think we have to recognize these tripwires as we begin to explore the 3R strategy. And this is something I advocate to every client that I talk with. It begins with research. And notice that I'm not spelling that R-E-S-E-A-R-C-H, but instead R-E-dash search. Many of you have hit the job boards and you're beginning to try to field interviews and such. You probably know, but in case you don't, most companies are using applicant tracking systems. And unless you are keyword enhancing your resume to each particular job that you're applying for, chances are very high a human being has not even seen you. And let me go back a step, because what I advocate is not just focusing on that research, not just exploring the job market, but exploring all three of these strategies simultaneously to the ability that you can, because it just broadens your options. And certainly, I always encourage clients I work with, hey, stay on the job market, continue to see what it holds, but at least define your income, lifestyle, wealth, and equity goals. Determine if you're seeking to make a meaningful change and ask yourself as you're exploring these opportunities, do they have the potential to meet those expectations as you've defined them? And again, we're not limiting our options to the search part of the equation, but that's an important component to evaluating what's out there. One of the exercises that I do with my clients, it's almost a mini SWOT analysis we call the U 2.0, and it really helps get underneath those kinds of questions and dangers, those monsters under the bed that I mentioned a couple times earlier. And for those of you that are seeing the video, you can see the responses one of my clients had. For those of you listening on the podcast, I'll share with you. The question is, what are the common obstacles and issues that you feel you're facing? And while this person was on the re-dash search, on the job market, they identified conventional career options are more limited. Can I afford to take control of my destiny? Little to no opportunity to build wealth. Well, they have, by way of this exercise, defined their income, lifestyle, wealth, and equity goals and determined that as it stands today, the job market alone may not be able to help them meet those. So I encourage them to reduce into writing some goals around how can they help mitigate those dangers and risks. And it leads us to the second step, which is reimagining. There's a law in the world, stimulus response, right? And if you change the stimulus, you change the response. A good friend of mine once told me, if the kids won't play with you on the playground, Bring a new shiny set of marbles to the playground tomorrow and then see how many of those kids want to play with you now. And that applies to our skill sets and abilities. Looking at our current role for opportunities to enhance, to leverage, to pursue things that others aren't, develop expertise in areas that can lead to more fulfillment in the job, reimagining is about. And no better example of that than the British cycling team. Prior to hiring David Brailsford, they had a miserable record. They had never won an Olympic gold medal. They never even placed in the Olympics. They didn't place in the Tour de France. In fact, their team was so terrible that bicycle manufacturers, literally several of them, would not let the team use their bicycles for fear of the damage it would do to that manufacturer's reputations, if you could imagine. So along comes Dave Brailsford, and he believes in the aggregation of marginal gains. And he literally went through over 100 1% improvements. I listed a few examples here. Finding the most comfortable bike seat, rubbing alcohol in the tires for better traction, buying the team electrically heated undergarments, testing clothing and wind funnels to find the most aerodynamic, about 100 different things, even painting the inside of the trucks that transported the cycles white so that he could spot specks of dust that could fall into the chains and affect performance. And by way of the aggregation of all of those 1% improvements, they went on to win 178 world championships, 66 Olympic or Paralympic gold medals, and 5 Tour de France wins. Tour de France, excuse me. So as you start to reimagine what you can do within your current role, look for those 1% aggregatable improvements that you can make. Look for opportunities others perhaps aren't seeing that you're aware of, and how can you pin your expertise to reinvent the role that you're currently in? Another part of reinvention is exploring exit strategies. So it may be the case that, hey, I'm stuck where I am today. I can't afford to make a change. But long term, I want to plan for a way to make my exit, just like Snagglepuss in the picture, if you're watching on video. And there are ways to develop second revenue streams. In fact, the organization I'm with probably work with 50 or 60 very viable models. And could you, while you're maintaining that role, especially if you can't reinvent yourself within that role and you're not necessarily happy where you're at, but you can't make a change, could you develop a second revenue stream that, as a business matured 2, 3 years down the road, would give you that stepping off point? It would be built to the place where it could replace that corporate income. So reinvention can take shape in a few different ways. Finally, reinvention. And this is what becomes challenging, not just because of that narrowing funnel that I described to you earlier, but even knowing where to begin. And many clients I work with say to me, listen, I'd love to explore entrepreneurship with you. I don't know where to start. I've looked at things on the internet. I don't know what I should or shouldn't. I tend to look at things that are aligned with my current experience. The truth is, none of those rules apply in the world of entrepreneurship that do in the world of corporate America, at least in the world of entrepreneurship that I work in. It's really the transferable skills. It's really the alignment for a day in the life and the income, lifestyle, wealth, and equity goals that matter. And in my coaching practice, I have a number of tools that guide my clients through that experience of self-reflection. For example, one of the assessments creates a 46-page report about my client that we spend some time on. And amongst all the different insights it shares, it defines ideal environment. My clients have a chance to inventory their skill sets and imagine where those skill sets might apply, combined with the expertise of a brand or concept that I may introduce them to. And I suggest this. I always say to my clients, listen, if you can, if you have the bandwidth, continue to research in the open job market. Expand your options by reimagining the role that you're currently in. And if you can't, consider developing a second revenue stream that can lead to an exit strategy. If you're feeling stuck where you are, there's a way out. It just may take a little bit longer. And as a third pathway, consider reinventing your career. Consider exploring, learning about entrepreneurial possibilities. Look, whether they're right for you or not, only you can determine. But if you're open-minded to learn, you may find a broad, brilliant new direction for your career that is everything you look for and can achieve that work-life balance that you want. So I want to thank all of you. I will tell you that the exploration that I went through in closing was very much the same. When I was still in the music industry, I started a fledgling blog because as I shared with you, I wanted to become an author. I was at an event in Washington, D.C. called Realspring, and it just so happened that there was a seat at the bar next to a gentleman who I didn't know. And of course, bar time is networking time in professionally speaking for events and conventions. So I sat down and started talking to him. And about an hour into the conversation, I finally got around to asking him what kind of work did he do? And he said, "Well, I'm a documentary filmmaker. And my most recent documentary was around the largest team of persons with disabilities to ever reach Mount Everest Base Camp, and also about their expedition leader who went on to summit Mount Everest, first man in history missing an arm." And I'm like, "I want to interview you for my blog." And he agreed. But after that interview, he had talked to the expedition leader, dear friend of mine, Gary Guller, and Gary expressed interest in being interviewed for the blog, which I did. And as Gary and I got to know each other better, Gary shared a goal that he had of having a book published around the experience and the story. And guess what? That led to my second book called Make Others Greater. Is really the story of the Team Everest team built within a executive leadership kind of framework, and taking their story, their inspiring story, and pulling out the lessons, pulling the threads on the lessons of what they learned in that experience and how it might apply to modern day business. So again, when you've defined your goals, when you've defined your primary aim, as you start to explore not just one single area, but apply that 3R strategy, you begin to see things you wouldn't normally see. You begin to ask questions that you might not normally ask, and you meet with opportunities like I did with the Team Everest documentarian. I would have never have explored had I not had that goal of being a writer and had I not asked those questions. So again, I want to thank all of you for staying in this conversation. I hope that you pulled out at least one, if not more, important points as we went through the slides that I shared. And as always, you can reach me at pmacko@esourcecoach.com or visit my website, pmacko.esourcecoach.com, or give me a call. My direct line is 760-230-3146. And if I can be of assistance to any of you, I want to thank you for joining and tell you that I'm just an email or phone call away. Thank you so much. Go take on the day.